Good afternoon. It is 4:15 Thursday, October 10th. This is the TDN Writers Room Podcast. I'm Joe Bianca, Associate Editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News.
I'm Bill Finley, a contributor to the Thoroughbred Daily News.
Brian DiDonato, Racing Editor of the TDN and Managing Partner of Franklin Ave Equine.
Alan Carrasco, Managing Editor of the TDN.
First off, I'd like to welcome Bill Finley back to the podcast.
Thank you. Welcome, Thank Bill. You. I missed you guys last week.
There was a hole.
I heard I was the butt of everybody's jokes. Yeah, how much I talk.
Only Jaws. There's a real hole in our heart last week without you. Now we're all whole again.
So if I give you the silent treatment today, nobody's going to complain.
Perhaps not. All right, so we're going to start off with a little recap of last weekend's racing. I think that'll be the bulk of this because it was the last big prep weekend for the Breeders' Cup. I think the main story was the two-year-old racing. And we had a couple of really impressive performances. Max Field, I want to start off with that one just because I gave him out last week on the podcast.
Well done.
Thought he ran amazing. I stopped watching him for a second because I was focused on the favorite, and he was. It seemed like he was up to the leaders in the blink of an eye,
right.
And he was dead last for a long time in that race. And Keeneland isn't quite the same highway it used to be, but you still don't want to be too far back on that dirt track. So. That was a really impressive performance. Strode out really nicely. It came out the other day that the runner-up, Gouverneur Morris, is going to skip the Breeders' Cup, and Barry Irwin of Team Valor wants him to put on a little more weight, and it's going to give him 6 weeks off in the Windstar paddock. We also had Tis the Law, very impressive winner, New York bred, who took the champagne, and really, he's one of those horses that I think a couple of times, the two times he's run so far, it's one of the rare horses that you think there's a lot left in the tank beyond what he showed. I think most of the time that's kind of overrated when horses are geared down or wrapped up or whatever, but he's run for like a 16th of a mile in each of those two races. So I'll open the floor up. I know Bill has a strong opinion about Tis the Law, so we'll get it started with that.
Well, let's start with the positive. This is a very good horse. I mean, like you said, I mean, he just won easily and over a nice horse in Green Means Go. But I don't get it. You know, why not go to the Breeders' Cup off of this? And, you know, they've come out and said it's a long way to travel. California, it is. But have we really gotten to that point where even the Breeders' Cup doesn't matter it anymore? You know, we're going to focus on the Kentucky Derby. Well, okay, fine. After you win the Breeders' Cup, focus on the Kentucky Derby. I mean, you're probably throwing any chance of being two-year-old champion out the window and, you know, passing on what is – remains a very, very important race in American racing. I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Brian and Alan, yes?
He was so sharp in those races, I would think he might be a Breeders' Cup juvenile horse more so than a Derby horse. And, you know, it's kind of like Instagram this year where you have such a good horse coming to the race. It's hard not to take a shot at the Breeders' Cup, you know, no matter how prestigious the Derby is, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we've been up and down this road with Barkley Tag before. I mean, he's obviously a conservative sort of guy. You know, Sakatoga's been down this road before. It is. It's hard to imagine. I mean, you can run in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, if you win, you've locked up a championship, and then you have off between November 1st and you know February 13th that you get your rest there. So, it's hard. Hard thing to understand, really.
I think it's kind of cool, though, that the Sakatoka guys are still. And I mean, I know there's only a couple of principal partners left from the original Funny Side run, but it's still pretty cool to see those silks because no one had really ever heard of them before the Funny Side thing, and now it's 16 years later, and they're still in the game at the top level. And also, it's always nice to see the New York bred program do well on a grand stage. The other thing I noticed about these 2-year-old races, these two big grade ones. Is the continued success of these freshman sires. You know, Tis the Law is by Constitution, the runner-up in the Brutus Returties by Constitution. We also had on Sunday in the Frisette Wicked Whisper by Liam's Map, second grade one winner for Liam's Map. So I think we talked about this before, but it was a really hyped freshman sire class, and it seems like they're delivering so far. Constitution especially seems to just can do no wrong on the track.
I mean, obviously doing very well, and I think I counted at one point that 13, I could be wrong on this, 13 freshman sires had been represented by at least one black type winner already this year, which seemed like an extraordinary number to me. So, you know, like you said, I mean, there's, you know, hope always springs eternal, I suppose. And, you know, you look at the class of freshman sire incoming and you say, yeah, it looks like a pretty strong group on paper. And so it's nice to actually see that being borne out on the track.
Yeah, and it's just, I feel like it's a little bit of a needed injection of new blood. I feel like that's been the kind of the cream of the crop has been dominating the sire ranks for a long time. So it's cool to see it shaken up a little bit with these new sires. Also this past weekend, I think outside of the two-year-old races, the big story was Omaha Beach's return in the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. He had a lot of starts and stops, it seemed like, since he was ruled out of the Derby. So he was pointing to the ACAC for a little while, and I thought it was interesting for him to come back at 6 furlongs, and especially to run down a horse like Chancelot, who, I mean, I guess he's not the same horse that he was in Amsterdam. So maybe he's
121 buyer.
Yeah. Maybe he's not that horse anymore, but he's still a crack sprinter, and it was cool to see Omaha Beach able to run him down, and a pretty incredible training job by Richard Mandela to have him ready for that race. It's an interesting thing because he seems to have a lot of options now because he's already proven at 1 1/8, probably could go 1 1/4. He's proven he can win at 6 furlongs now. Maybe in between is somewhere ideal for him. But what do you guys? If you put on your Fox Hill hat, what would you do if you had Omaha Beach going forward?
I go in Breeders' Cup Classic because he's good enough. Mm-hmm. And Richard Mandel is good enough. I mean, he's underestimating his own training talents, I think. They've said that he said the goat from this sprint race, which was a hard race. I mean, to run down that horse was pretty remarkable coming off a layoff. And Mandel has come back and said, you know, go from 6 furlongs to 1 1/4 is just asking too much. I say have more confidence in your horse. Mm-hmm. I think he's – I mean, wouldn't you give him – if you imagine the horses that are out there. And just right now, 3 weeks out, wouldn't you look at this horse as a major contender in the Classic, look at that race as a good prep for it? You know, certainly I understand the 6 1/8 to 1 1/4 business, but, go for the whole enchilada. Why not?
I'm with you. I think this is definitely the year to do that with this group of horses. There's really no huge standout among the Classic horses. I mean, he could maybe go favorite if you ran in that.
Yeah, right? I could see him being favored.
I mean, I know he doesn't have quite the figures, but I could see that.
Yeah, he's got a lot of steam behind him.
Right,
always,
exactly. Yeah, that's so part of it.
But, I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
I've been a giant fan of Richard Mandela for as long as I've been in racing, from as long as I sat out at Arlington on the apron in the morning when he would bring Sandpit for the million. I think, he's won Breeders' Cups, won 4 in a day, orchestrated the career and, longevity, the Tin Man, Pleasantly Perfect. I have to think this is one of his greatest achievements ever. Hmm. And now, I don't know. I'm a huge Omaha Beach fan as well. I mean, the fact that they're leaning, quote unquote, towards the sprint is shocking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is that, Alan?
I just don't see him as a true sprinter. If they go in the dirt mile, they were to win that, then you've got grade ones at 6, 8, and 9 furlongs. That's pretty good for a horse going into stud. So, my Fox Hill hat.
Yeah. It's partly disappointing that he's going off to stud so soon because you don't really see horses with his kind of versatility all that often. And also being by Warfront, I would have liked to see him try the turf down the line as well. And, it's just unfortunate that I think we won't get to see him for that much longer.
Are we certain that maybe this is a dumb question. Are we certain that he's going off to stud?
Well, I mean, he's got...
I know that
he's got the deal.
But I don't... I thought there was talk of maybe...
I also read that they were considering a 4-year-old campaign, but it's just... I guess it depends on what happens in the Breeders' Cup.
And you'd think he'd have to go to the Pegasus. It's almost like the Pegasus is kind of this right after... people are... You don't want to skip the Breeders' Cup or look ahead past the Breeders' Cup, but it seems like some people are at least... It's another race to think about that's obviously pretty lucrative.
And I think that's part of the reason that the Pegasus has been successful in its early runnings is the positioning on the calendar because it doesn't preclude you from going off to stud that year.
Mm-hmm. I think the other interesting thing is if we kind of talked about the Eclipse Awards last week and where he maybe fits in now. If he were to win any Breeders' Cup race, maybe he's champion 3-year-old. He might already be champion. It's hard to even keep track at this point. Yeah. But, if he wins the Classic, he's probably Horse of the Year, right?
He's up there. Yeah,
But that goes back to my original point that, if he wins the Classic Horse of the Year, if he wins the Breeders' Cup Sprint, ho-hum, yawn, let's move on to the next race. I mean, that's a little harsh, I guess, but it certainly won't be the accomplishment of the magnitude of the challenge of winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. And then Brian made a good point. If ever there's a year to do it, this is the year. I mean, you know, I absolutely think he'd be the favorite in there. Just because, you know, like, you know, this horse has been so hyped and, you know, people love Mandela, Mike Smith, everything like that. You know, that's why I just wish, you know, Fox Hill has a history of, you know, running, you know, mares against colts and taking chances and stuff. You know, what they did with Harvard of Grace and everything. So, you know, I hope they can, you know, look, it's not my horse and who's to tell Dick Mandela what to do. But I hope they reconsider this. You know, I just don't get excited about seeing him winning the dirt mile, you know, or the sprint. And if you're going to, if you can't go a mile and a quarter, then I think the dirt mile makes so much more sense than the sprint. I mean, sprint, you just get these razor tough, you know, 6 furlong horses that go out there and fly. And that's not Omaha Beach, even though he ran down that horse the other day. You know, you want to see him going more distance than 6 furlongs.
Yeah, and he's, I think he would need a setup in the sprint because, you know, you don't often see those deep closers. And he's got a little more tactical speed. But I think, like you said, with all those razor sharp sprinters, he's gonna need a setup in there.
And he could get one too. I mean, if you've got, you know, if Imperial Hint and Chancelot go ding donging it up front, I mean, certainly he could sit back, draft behind those, and, you know, come out and make a run. So, it's not impossible. I mean, I think it took a tremendous animal to do what he did the other day. I don't know. For me, the dirt mile just makes most sense. I agree with you, Bill. I mean, does it get the pulse racing? Not necessarily.
I think your point about Richard Mandel is well taken, that he's a big race trainer. Like that's the way I would describe him, is he's never going to compete for training titles in California, especially with the Bob Baffords and John Sadlers and Peter Millers of the world. But you want to get a horse ready for a big day, a big race. I think he's one of the guys, one of the two or three guys you want in this country. We're gonna touch on the European weekend in racing because we have our resident Euro expert Alan Carasso here. But I think the cool thing about Enable is she kind of makes everybody feel like a Euro expert just because she's must see TV, you know what I mean? And it's not, I'm not someone who is gonna set an alarm to watch the Arc as great of a race as it is, but she's appointment viewing. And you know, I thought she ran really well on Sunday. She just got beaten over the top, and it happens sometimes. I think she has more than proven her credentials as one of the best mares of all time, maybe definitely of this decade and of this century. So I don't think there was anything for her connections to hang her head about. I hope that she comes to the Breeders' Cup, but I can understand if after all the racing she's done, they want to, you know, give her an easier retirement. So what did anybody else think about Enable in the Arc?
Well, again, you know, you said all the racing she's done. And, you know, again, it's things that bother me about the sport that, you know, again, Judd Mond has been fantastic for the game. I understand that. And, you know, but, you know, I don't understand when, you know, 4 starts this year and, you know, the year's not over. Again, I mean, I'm telling everybody what to do with their horses. I understand that. And I'm telling very, very smart people what to do with their horses. But, damn, go in the Breeders' Cup.
I don't know if Prince Callion's looking, listen to the TDM podcast, but if so.
He's told me. But, you know, don't you want to see her go out with a bang, with a victory? This is no way for a great horse to go out. And what a story. She'd be the story. Forget the Classic. She comes to the Windsor Breeders' Cup Tour for the second straight year. She's the headline of the day. I mean, no matter what happens. Somebody can win the Classic by 25 lengths.
I mean, that's what I remember from last year's Breeders' Cup more than anything. Yeah, when I said all the racing, I didn't mean necessarily the quantity. I meant, like, the quality of starts and who she's gone up against and really has never ducked anybody and has taken on all comers. But, Al, what did you think about that race?
Yeah, I mean, she you know, she certainly showed up. It's not as if she, you know, went out there and you know, kind of stopped running at the 200 meters and call it a day. You know, to listen to John Gosden, like if you're on Twitter or find a way to listen to John Gosden, the way that he dissects and analyzes a race, both before and after the fact, you could listen to him all day long. And, you know, some people were critical of Frankie Dettori for moving a little too soon. You know, he got to the quarter pole and said it was time. Thought that was the time to try to pinch it. And he opened up on her. And, you know, ultimately, the ground was desperate. Mm-hmm. Probably as bad or worse than it was at Churchill last year. And, you know, just found her out in the last 50 yards or so. But, you know, she certainly ran a winning race and just got run down by a better horse on that day.
If you had to guess, do you think she's coming to the Breeders' Cup?
Tough question, Joe. Good question.
No one's going to hold you to it.
I mean, my gut feeling is that she does not come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I would lean to as well. Brian, I know you were scintillated by that.
No,
let's hear it.
I usually defer to Alan on these kind of things. I kind of hope she goes, not to sound like a monster, because I'd be betting against her just because mm-hmm. it's kind of seems like an afterthought, and typically horses that run in the arc are usually good bets against mm-hmm. in the turf. She's obviously an amazing horse. I got a chance to see her up close last year at the Breeders' Cup, and, you know, there's definitely just something special about her. I thought she maybe moved a little early, but... And Waltgeist is a nice horse. Mm-hmm. We have to go.
Well done.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You're missing, I mean, you're burying the lead here, yeah. Joe. We're going to unveil to the whole world that Alan Carrasso is a German expert. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Al, come on. What the heck is a Waltgeist?
So, now, I'm supposed to know, but let's break it down. We're going to call it a compound noun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Wald is a German word for forest. Geist is. Appropriately enough, with Halloween coming, is ghost.
Mm.
Now, don't ask me what forest ghost means. I tell you, the forest music is the dam of McLean's music. His dam is named Wald Lerche. He's by Galileo, out of a monsoon mare. I would have to ask the breeder or the owner where the name come from exactly. So,
I know what Zeitgeist means. I heard Zeitgeist, but Waldgeist is a new one. So last week we talked about what we would fix first in racing, and I think we all had some pretty constructive ideas, and it was a good conversation. Bill did not get to join us, but I know he's got plenty of ideas, so why don't you take it, Bill?
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate Brian for coming up with what I think is the only idea that matters, lowering the takeout. But I've been instructed that I can't – I've got to come up with something fresh because our listeners don't want to hear the same – someone harp on the same topic 2 weeks in a row. So I'll go with another one that is every bit as important, is aftercare. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a big story for the TDN earlier this year and found that really the industry – this is one area where you could say the industry thumbs up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've really gotten together, and we've seen such a big improvement. And, you know, basically what the whole impetus of that is Trax saying that to trainers, if we find that you sent a horse to the sales, the cheap slaughterhouse sales, we're going to throw you out. And they are basically that threat. I mean, virtually every racetrack in America now has that ban on a guy. That threat has worked and has kept many horses away from the slaughterhouse pipeline. But it's not good enough because, you know, we need an organized effort rather than this hodgepodge of, you know, one rescue group there and another rescue group there and all of them just begging everybody for money. I mean, we need a program in this sport that is, you know, the Jockey Club would be the place to start, that is funded and is dedicated to the overall notion that it's impossible for a horse. I guess it would never be impossible. A horse is 21 and has been on some guy's sitting on some guy's farm for the last 7-8 years and everybody's lost track of it. There's nothing you can do about that. But let's say with the window of coming off the racetrack, you know, or within a year of coming off the racetrack, that it never happens. That we find a way to make sure it never happens, not even once. We're getting there, but, you know, that last hurdle is to have an all-encompassing industry-wide effort where, you know, guy doesn't have to, when the horse runs ninth beaten 34 lengths at Mountaineer Park, the guy doesn't have to scratch his head and say, now what am I supposed to do with this thing? He knows, call 1-800, you know, whatever, and mm-hmm. it's all taken care of.
Yeah, I think that it's, like you said, it has to be an industry-wide effort from owners, from racetrack management all the way down to bettors. You know, every time I have a nice score, I try to pay it forward and donate a little something to aftercare. So it's something we should all have a stake in and all feel a moral obligation to contribute to. And yeah, you're right. We have made a lot of progress, and we talk on this podcast about how everything in racing is reactive rather than proactive. I think this is one of the things that racing has really kind of gotten ahead of. And yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done, but the emphasis on aftercare is something that I think that racing should be proud of.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But let's do a better job. We've done a good job. Let's do a better job.
Yeah,
and lower the takeout.
Can always do better.
Yeah, but it's important.
Of course,
it really is. And you know, damn it, I was not supposed to go off on this tangent. But did anybody notice that in September, handle was down 6.2%? Now let's connect the dots. Could that possibly be because it's the opening of the NFL season? And could that possibly be because of sports betting? I mean, I don't think you can contribute or say, you know, flat out, okay, that 6.2% was transferred from racing to, I know I'm getting off on a wild tangent here that nobody was prepared for, but you can't say that 6.2%, you know, I understand you can't say all of it went to sports betting, but I bet you a lot of it did. I really do. And you know, just the timing of that, I thought that raised an eyebrow for me.
Yeah, and that was part of the argument last week when we were talking about lowering takeout, is that there are a lot more options now for other bettors, especially younger bettors who are more price sensitive maybe than traditional bettors. So right. I think that makes sense.
And keep in mind, when you make a traditional sports bet, the takeout's 9%.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get any 9% takeouts at the racetrack. You know?
Yeah, my main issue and the reason I don't bet sports is that you gotta wait like 3.5 hours for the outcome.
It's right,
like
to get hit an even money shot.
Yeah, so now, that's the thing, that like when I talk to my friends, I have plenty of friends who bet sports and I try to sell them on racing. To me, the thing that that I try to pitch is the quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're a multi-race player, then you have to wait a little bit, but it's pretty constant action for your money. And yeah, the takeout's a problem, but that's just not exciting for me to bet sports and sit around and wait 4 hours to maybe win $100 from 110. Like, that's just, I don't know. I need a little bit more juice than that. It's just me.
Try blackjack once.
Yeah, I'm like...
Which has a much lower takeout than horse racing.
I'm hopeless with cards, man, of any kind.
So anecdotally, Bill, back to your point, I'm just back from Keeneland for the weekend, and whatever little betting I do these days is usually through the betting platform here in New Jersey. But I actually bet with real live greenbacks over the weekend, putting it into the self-service machines, and when you cash a winning bet, it asks you, there's a prompt that comes up asking you if you want to donate.
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, they do that at Saratoga. Yeah,
that's great.
Saratoga too.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I placed a bet at a racetrack.
Mm-hmm. You're saying so you cashed a ticket?
Cashed.
You like Maxfield too, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's give you a little bit of credit too.
Yeah, Maxfield and Stubbins.
Wow, I could never have bet Stubbins, man.
Yeah, just, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Just felt right.
Now, Doug O'Neill's pretty dangerous. Anywhere he ships, he seems to show up with a big shot. I love betting at the track. It's like, I feel like I'm more responsible with my money at the track because you can actually, the physical handing over the bills, whereas, you know, with the online accounts, just you press a button and then it's gone.
How did we go from aftercare to this? Wow.
We're gamblers. We can only stay on topic for so long. Aftercare is very important. Yes. We've already established that. But so is takeout, and we got to do something about that. The thing I wanted to mention just real quick is we had a couple of retirements this week with World of Trouble. So that seemed like a little predictable because he's had a lot of issues this year and hasn't really been able to stay on the track much. He's an interesting sire, I think, to keep an eye on. He's retiring to Hillendale, and just because, I don't know, is there a son of Cantharos who has really, you know, had a big splash at stud yet, or even had a big stud deal of any kind? I can't think of one.
Well,
there's one.
What?
Oh. He was Carrasa. Pucaro was in Florida.
Okay. And they're related, right? They are.
The dams are half sisters.
But yeah, he interests me as a sire going forward just because of his versatility. I think that's like the main thing that if I had a mare I would look for is versatility. And he doesn't get much better than winning grade ones on dirt, on turf, sloppy track. So he's a little interesting going forward. The other one that was notable was Preservationist, was retired to Airdrie the other day. That was a little disappointing to me just because he had taken so long to get to this top level. You know, I mean, he obviously had a tremendous amount of talent going all the way back to his 3-year-old year, but it just, it was a little disappointing to see him get to this level where he was a, like a major contender in the older dirt male division, and then for him to be retired before he had a chance to run in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So that was a little disappointing, but he's another one that's interesting. I'm a big Arch fan. I think Arch is probably one of the most underrated sires of all time. So he's another one that that has a little bit of potential going forward.
And he's got a huge dam side pedigree. It's that Emory Hamilton family that, you know, Verrazano, and you see every at every sale, there's one that sells for a ton of money from that family, and it's very, very big family.
And also becomes a TDN Rising Star.
Yeah, there's usually one. Yep.
There's a few of those.
Yep.
But one takeaway I had from that is that, you know, there's so much talk about how the addition of the Saudi Cup, it now has this potential for people, you know, I don't even know what the numbers are. They're just out of their minds. If you go in the Breeders' Cup, Pegasus, Saudi Cup, Dubai World Cup, and, you know, and we want to see, would that keep horses in racing? And, you know, I'm spending way too much time telling people what to do with their horses. But, you know, these people didn't nibble at it. Mm-hmm. You know, again, you know, it's just time. You know, the horse went through a lot, and I understand all that. And, you know, ship them all the way out to California for the Breeders' Cup, maybe. You know, they just didn't feel that was a thing to do. But, you know, they weren't lured by that pot of gold that's sitting out there. And, you know, that's the story that we all have to keep an eye on now. You know, is this thing going to keep horses in racing? You know, it's not like the Pegasus. If you devote yourself to these races going forward after the Pegasus, you can't go to stud. The Pegasus is the only one. So, you know, are we going to see more horses that otherwise would have been retired stay in the game because of the addition of this race? And, you know, I can't pin what will happen all on one horse, obviously, but, you know, Centennial Farms, you know, said, no, thank you. We're going to retire him now.
The other interesting thing about the Saudi Cup and the Dubai World Cup is I remember not too long ago, races like the Stephen Foster and the Suburban were like big targets for handicap horses. And they've both been downgraded to grade twos now. And it seems like the fields get a little bit weaker and weaker every year. So that's a little bit unfortunate. I think it's only going to get worse with the Saudi Cup added to the schedule. And it doesn't seem like anyone really wants to run in the handicap division until the Whitney in the summer. So I think it's cannibalized New York and Kentucky racing a little bit. So this is by far our shortest TDM podcast yet. This is probably going to be more the norm going forward, you know, especially as we get into the off season. We've had a busy month or two as we started this thing off, and it seems like we're going to taper down a little bit as time goes on. And, you know, we'll preview the Breeders' Cup, obviously, in the next couple of weeks. But we're trying to keep this thing around a half hour. That was the goal from the start.
How'd we do? Today
we're doing great, but so far this is the only one where we actually hit our time.
We can spend a few more times talking about Alan's German if you want. If you want to go a little longer.
Or you guys could talk baseball. I know you guys don't care as much. Your teams aren't in it. But anyway, so that's the plan going forward, to try to keep this thing to about a half hour. And you know, hopefully you guys are enjoying it, and we will see you next week. I am Joe Bianca for the Thoroughbred Daily News. I want to thank Bill Finley, Alan Carasso, and Brian DiDonato, signing off.